If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery. When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Today, you'll hear Seth's chat with comedian Jim Gaffigan, who takes a few more questions backstage just for this podcast. But first, a closer look.
Trump White House faced more stunning turmoil today when new communications director Anthony Scaramucci was pushed out. And that comes just days after the resignation of former chief of staff Reince Priebus, as well as the failure of the president's signature health care bill. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. He may have been quieter than most other Trump acolytes, but Reince Priebus was one of the president's most loyal supporters. He played a pivotal role keeping mainstream Republicans in line when most of the GOP was trying to rebel against Trump after he won the nomination. As you may recall, he lavished Trump with praise during a super creepy cabinet meeting last month.
On behalf of the entire senior staff around you, Mr. President, we thank you for the opportunity and the blessing that you've given us to serve your agenda.
Ugh. You sound like a stalker. Why don't you just go to his Instagram and like 15 pictures in a row? What was going through his head when he said that? Oh, look, there's history. I'm going to go stand on the wrong side of it. There's a good chance that's where Priebus was sitting when Trump fired him. Although, I assume Trump didn't actually say anything. He just pushed a button and Priebus fell through a trap door. But, of course, Trump wouldn't really use a trap door to fire someone because that is too quick and not nearly mean enough. What really happened is, on Friday, Priebus deplaned from Air Force One and got in an SUV with other staffers. While he was in the SUV, Trump tweeted that he had named a new chief of staff. According to Politico, other aides riding with him hopped into a different car once the tweet posted. His SUV separated from the motorcade and went on a rainy ride through Washington alone. Even worse, it was only raining on that car. Priebus was so willing to demean himself in service of the president that he went on TV and defended Trump's many absurd lies, like the one about his inauguration crowds. An interview that left even Fox News host Chris Wallace completely bewildered.
On the left, you've got the Obama inaugural crowd. On the right, you've got the Trump inaugural crowd. Which one is bigger?
I can take a picture of them. I was there in the mall.
I mean, let me say, first of all, too, I think Chris, this is a ridiculous conversation.
Right.
Put up the picture again.
This is,
folks, put up the
you
picture
You can keep
again.
Putting the picture up, but I can take a picture. Look, wait a second. I can take an aerial picture right now, Chris, and I can say, look at the difference.
That's right. He could take an aerial picture. In fact, it'd probably be easier now since he's currently atop the Washington Monument hanging out to dry. In fact, Priebus was apparently so servile that even trivial and demeaning tasks were delegated to him. For example, the Washington Post reported on Friday that at one point, during a meeting in the Oval Office, a fly began buzzing overhead, distracting the president. As the fly continued to circle, Trump summoned his chief of staff and tasked him with killing the insect. Wow. You know your status is diminished when you can be replaced by a strip of sticky paper. Also, you called Reince Priebus in to kill a fly? You should have called Obama.
Nice.
Now that's a death panel. And yet, despite all the abuse and all the rumors, for months, Priebus survived the constant gossip about his rocky tenure and his impending firing. That is until Trump hired his new communications director, former Wall Street financier Anthony Scaramucci. Scaramucci, 114 pounds of Alfredo sauce, hair gel, and rage, tore into Priebus in a profanity-laden tirade last week, calling him a paranoid schizophrenic, a paranoiac. I love that he used the word paranoiac. Paranoiac sounds like a town on Long Island. How do you get to the Hamptons? Oh, you just take the LIE, pass around Ronkonkoma and Sacaponac until you hit paranoiac. Boom, you're there. And Scaramucci. Scaramucci had not limited his attacks on Priebus to public interviews. He also trashed him in private. According to the Daily Beast, two sources who have known Scaramucci for years say that he has privately called Priebus Reince Penis. So it's official. The White House is a middle school cafeteria. I'm sorry, Ryan. Let me make it up for you. You know, the president and I, you know, we want you to join our reading group. It's called the Pen 15 Club. You just have to write it on your head and you're in. So Trump faced a choice. He faced a choice and he chose Scaramucci. And as we know, Trump is nothing if not loyal, which means the mooch is here to stay.
Breaking news out of the White House. Anthony Scaramucci is out as White House communications director after just 10 days on the job.
Man. That's a kick in the Reince penis. Scaramucci's last name is longer than his tenure. Even at his last job, Trump only fired one person a week. At this point, getting fired is part of orientation. Here's your desk. This is your extension number. Now clean out your desk. But just think about that. Scaramucci got Priebus fired, and then he got fired 2 days later. That's like telling someone, see you in hell, and then literally showing up in hell the next day. And now the question is, who will be the next communications director? How do you top Scaramucci? Would it be an air horn with chest hair? A lasagna with a switchblade? A monster energy drink with googly eyes? Who knows? But it's important to remember that while the White House is in chaos, there's also another dysfunctional branch of government, and that's Congress. Because on Friday, the White House suffered its most humiliating defeat yet when the GOP health care bill was shot down in a stunning late-night vote in the Senate. Three GOP senators, Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, and John McCain, voted against the plan. And it happened in the most dramatic way possible, with McCain waiting until Collins and Murkowski had already voted to deliver the final blow, with Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell standing right there in the middle of the chamber watching it all unfold.
It was approaching 1:30 when the main crucial climactic vote began. Collins voted no. Murkowski voted no. But McCain didn't answer when his name was called. He'd walk in seconds later, stand in front of McConnell, and ask for the clerk's attention.
Mr. Peters.
No. No. And of course, Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, arms folded, staring at McCain, watching him walk off the floor, knowing the bill was dead.
Look at McConnell. He looks like a bunch of teenagers just raised enough money to save the rec center he wanted to tear down. You know, if there was one takeaway from the healthcare vote on Friday night, it's this. C-SPAN needs better cameras. Kids are shooting HD movies with iPhones, but I have to watch this high drama on a 1980s mall security camera? I need close-ups, dramatic zooms. Somebody strap a GoPro to Mitch McConnell's head, for God's sake. Do something. Here's something else important to take away from this healthcare debacle. It's not just Trump. The current Republican Party is just as incoherent and just as dysfunctional as the Trump White House. They wrote the bill, known as a skinny repeal, over lunch on Thursday and released it just hours before the vote. And Republicans themselves, even the ones who voted for it, hated it. Senator Lindsey Graham put it this way.
The skinny bill as policy is a disaster. The skinny bill as a replacement for Obamacare is a fraud.
And then he voted for it. He's like a groom whose vows are just a list of grievances. We have nothing in common. Your parents hate me, and I've cheated on you many times. Anyway, I'm sad to say this, but I do. Now, Trump and his team like to repeat the lie that Obamacare is imploding, which it's not, but Trump does have the power to blow it up by, among other things, withholding subsidy payments for low-income people. And now he's threatening to do exactly that, tweeting over the weekend, if a new health care bill is not approved quickly, bailouts for insurance companies and bailouts for members of Congress will end very soon. Trump is actively threatening to blow up the health care system because he didn't get his way. It's like we're all on the bus from Speed. Trump is Dennis Hopper. The bus is Obamacare. And Bernie's an old guy in the back yelling, this ride should be free of charge. So with constant turmoil grinding the business of government to a halt, what's Trump's next move? Well, it looks like he's going to lean harder into authoritarianism. On Friday, during a speech to police officers on Long Island, he literally urged them to commit acts of brutality.
And when you see these towns, and when you see these thugs being thrown into the back of a paddy wagon, you just see them thrown in, rough. I said, please don't be too nice. Like when you guys put somebody in the car and you're protecting their head, you know, the way you put their hand over. Like, don't hit their head and they've just killed somebody, don't hit their head. I said, you can take the hand away, okay?
After that comment, the Suffolk County Police Department was actually forced to issue a statement making clear that as a department, we do not and will not tolerate roughing up prisoners. And that comes in the same week the Boy Scouts were also forced to issue a statement distancing themselves from the president. So the police and the Boy Scouts have both rebuked the president's comments. What's next? We here at the public library in no way support the drawing of cartoon wieners in the margins of our books? We're at the point now where all of the president's speeches will have to be followed by a legal disclaimer.
May God bless the United States of America. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much.
The views and opinions expressed by the President of the United States do not necessarily reflect those of the United States, its government, its people, or any affiliated groups, organizations, or subsidiaries. By reading this, viewer acknowledges that all opinions contained herein are intended to be fictitious, and any resemblance to actual facts or to reality is purely coincidental.
This has been A Closer Look.
Hi, this is Fred Armisen, the music director of the HG Band. Did you know that Late Night with Seth Meyers has a podcast now? That's what this is. And it's released every Wednesday and Friday. Tell your friends who love Late Night that they should subscribe at iTunes.com/LateNightSeth. You'll find it. What I just said, you'll be able to find it. I believe in you.
Our guest tonight is an Emmy and Grammy-nominated comedian and New York Times bestselling author. He's currently performing his Noble Ape Tour worldwide and his latest stand-up special, Cinco. The album is in stores now. Please welcome back to the show our friend Jim Gaffigan, everybody.
Has anyone else
No.
ever hit the wall?
No, you came out and you hit the wall on your way out.
I mean, it's hard to walk.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't know. I mean, this is my first time walking through a doorway.
And you are a very accomplished stand-up, and that's one of the few things a stand-up has to do is walk out.
I've never really walked into a door jam before.
Yeah.
But I did it on national television. Right.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
You had a very stressful year. I know everything's okay now, but your wife in April had a brain tumor removed.
Yes.
And she is recovering okay?
She's great. She's backstage. She's doing great. So thank you.
So happy to hear.
Yeah, no, it was, I mean, you know, I joke around about it in my act and everything, but it was really scary for a while because we have 5 kids.
Yeah.
And there were moments when I was like, oh my gosh, if anything happens to my wife, those 5 kids are going to be put up for adoption. Some of these jokes are just for the fathers. But no, she's doing great. And, you know, we are, you know, really grateful. She had an amazing team of doctors. She had a brain surgeon we found later on. He was the best.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how they determine who the best brain surgeon is. Maybe there's a competition, you know, America's Got Tumors or something. And Heidi Klum thought, well, you know, why does someone have to be the best brain surgeon? Isn't that enough that they're a brain surgeon? I mean, none of us could even get in med school. This guy went to med school, graduated, specialized in the brain, and then specialized in brain surgery. And people are like, yeah, but is he any good? He's good. You know what they do with the bad brain surgeons? They don't let them be brain surgeons. But it's really impressive when you think about it. Like a brain surgeon, they can never relax. Like at no point when they're at work and they say, hey, it ain't brain surgery. Because it's brain surgery.
Yeah. Do you think, if you were a doctor, what kind of doctor do you think you would be?
Well, I had some time to think about this. I think I would want to be an anesthesiologist because I just would like to walk into a room and say, hi, I'm Dr. Gaffigan. I'm going to give you some drugs so you can't talk or move. And then one of these strangers is going to cut you open. Good luck with that. I mean, what would draw someone to anesthesiology? It's like, I like medicine, but I really enjoy getting people high. Yeah. So if I could combine those two. I also prefer to sit during surgery. Yeah. I love how the anesthesiologists during surgery, they're always sitting there like, I don't even know why I have to be here. Yeah, they're still alive. I wish I had my phone.
And is this something that while you're going through it, how quickly did you start making jokes about it? Obviously, your wife knows who she's married to.
Yes.
But was this a case where as soon as the tumor came up, you were coming up with tumor comedy?
Well, there is something. I should preface this by saying my wife is my writing partner. So,
right.
You know, she got out of a 2-hour MRI, and, like, the first thing she said to me is, like, write down these jokes. So these are, you know, this is, I mean, she, you know, you have to have a sense of humor about this. I mean, it's just, you know, it's something, you know, but you have to be delicate about it. Like, you can't really complain around someone who's had a brain tumor. You can't, you know, my wife's not the type to bring it up. Well, once she did, she was like, you know, I had a brain tumor, but I couldn't say anything. I couldn't be like, yeah, that was like a month ago.
Right.
You know? What about my seasonal allergies? You know? They were pretty tough this year. But she's got an amazing sense of humor, so.
That's great. You talked about her being your writing partner on the new, this was a special you did.
Yes.
But on the album, which is really cool, you actually have commentary tracks where you and your wife kind of talk about how you came up with bits.
Yes.
Which is really unique and different. Was that fun to go back?
It was fun, and it's something that, you know, you're always, I think maybe in this podcast world, people are curious about every aspect of a creative process, so it was fun to look back on some of these jokes and to see what made it and what, you know, what the initial idea was and where we ended up. And it's always fun, you know, just chatting. And, you know, she complains about me. There's, like, topics of steak. And she's, like, she'll just be, like, commenting on how, like, when we tour with during the summer, we'll eat a steak for, like, 10 days in a row, which I think is great.
You're on a world tour. You went to Beijing. Yes. You brought all 5 kids.
Yes.
How did they like Beijing?
I mean, well, Beijing, China is amazing. I mean, it's so incredible. And I was lucky enough to bring my kids. We went to the Great Wall. We went to the Forbidden City. We, you know, rode in a rickshaw. And when we were leaving, I turned to my 5-year-old and I said, what was your favorite part of China? And he said, I like that time we saw the truck with the pigs on it. Because at one point we were stuck in traffic and this truck pulled up with pigs in cages. That was his favorite part. After the 15-hour flight. And I remember seeing those pigs in the truck and noticing that they seemed very happy, but I realized they were just looking at me and my 5 kids and going, well, at least I'm not that loser.
Yeah. Your kids were sort of instant celebrities in Beijing. Huge. Explain.
Well, we, in China, you know, I'm not a base, you know, I might look Chinese, but I'm not. And my children are pale and blonde like me, and they stuck out. And the Chinese were very nice. They're very nice, but many times people would want photos with my kids. They didn't really ask. They would just kind of grab a child. They'd be like, can I have a picture? And I'm like, I guess you're gonna. And after the picture, they would rub the blonde child's head, you know, because they're my children, but they're also lucky objects.
Yeah.
And after this happened a couple times, I turned to my wife and I was like, hey, we should charge, you know? And so.
But you did something even nicer than charging. You have video here. You this is a real thing you did. You just lined your children up at a wall.
Yes.
And let Chinese people take their picture.
Yes, well, it eventually got to that.
This is an actual video that you posted.
This was when we were at the aquarium in Beijing, and people were just like. It was amazing.
Great.
It was amazing.
Did they enjoy it?
Oh, they loved it.
That's great.
They loved it.
Man, it is always so great to see you. I'm so happy to hear your wife is doing better, and just such a pleasure. Thanks so much for being
here. Thank you.
Jim Gaffigan, everybody. Senko, the album is in stores now. Check out JimGaffigan.com for Noble 8 tour dates.
Hey, this is Kevin, one of the producers for Late Night with Seth Meyers. We're backstage with Jim Gaffigan and his wife Jeannie and his daughter Mari. So you guys were in the middle of summer. I understand that you just got a chance to go to Wisconsin for a little while, where Jeannie, where your family is from.
Yeah.
It was amazing. You know, 2 weeks, and Jeannie is one of 9 children. So whenever we go to Wisconsin, you know, the family gets together and they spend every single second and moment together. And after like a day, I love these people, but they're so close. At one point we went to a movie with 30 people. I don't want to do anything with 30 people. Like, if I was on the Titanic and it was going down and there was one rescue boat filled with 30 people, I would have been like, you know what, you guys go on. I don't want to be there when you're trying to decide what toppings to put on the pizza.
And you guys are writing partners. I mean, you really do come up with a lot of your jokes and material together. What's that process like for you? How long have you been doing that, I guess, first of all?
I think that we've been doing it for like 15 years.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Having done stand-up for, like, what, 26 years or
26
so?
Yeah, years. And I'm only 27 right now, so.
It's really weird that he started when he was 1.
Yeah. The weird thing is I've been doing stand-up forever, but I think I dealt with a lot of fear, you know, stage fright. And so by the time Jeannie and I started working together, I think that's when the writing mode kind of happened. And, you know, now, you know, we're touring with a whole brand new hour. And so the writing process, it's, you know, we also have done books and a television show. So it's when we have time to concentrate on stand-up, we can be pretty productive.
When Jim writes material, he'll, like, run it by me, and then I will sometimes know his voice better than he knows it himself because, you know, he'll be running from this to that and whatever, and I'll say, well, you know, it doesn't sound like something you would say.
Yeah.
So it's not only just adding jokes. It's more like...
It's editing.
It's
and
editing
also
and directing. And,
yeah. It's like, so stop it. It's, don't say that. You sound like a monster.
Uh-huh. And it's not just like I type up jokes and submit them and he rejects them or buys them.
Right. Yeah.
$100 a joke.
Yeah.
Right. Mari, having a dad who's a comedian, what's that like?
Perfect.
Do you ever give him jokes or ideas to talk about?
Well,
there's probably been a joke that I've taken from you.
Yeah, there was one time last summer where we went on a trip to a museum together, and it was only us because we were hiking around. We found this museum, and literally no one was there. And then there's a long figure, canoe, and there were a bunch of Indians passing in it. And then there was this one that was looking back really frantically, and then I pointed at it, and I said, when you forget your phone at home, and then you posted it on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, posted the photo.
You use your family a lot in your social media. I mean, there's a lot of it. It's like a little troop of actors that you have at your disposal all the time.
Yeah. I mean, it's a balance, right? Because you don't want it to be icky, but... I mean, who knows? Mari's 13. She might come home and go, ixnay, no mention me at all.
Right.
But it's kind of fun and it's good natured.
They kind of grew up going on tour. So now they're like, you know, when are we going to go on the bus again?
Yeah.
You know, they are kind of attracted to it. They like the opportunities that the entertainment world has sort of provided to them.
Well, congrats on everything. I mean, the album's fantastic, and there's bonus material, like we said, on it, and it's a lot of talking with you and Jeannie talking about how you came up with jokes and the evolution of some of these jokes, and it's really great to hear.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun, because with every hour that we've written, it's been, you know, our family's at a different stage, whether it be 1 kid or 3 kids or 5 kids. So it's kind of fun to... kind of keep track of where some of these jokes come from or what inspires them or like stuff that we had to cut out.
Right. And we had talked about this before, but you put on a track from 2001 that you recorded about your own father and before you were even a dad, right?
Yes.
And you kind of juxtaposed that on this 5th album of all this material about having kids.
Yeah. I mean, I recognize that I'm known as, a comedian who's a father of 5. And the very first TV set I did, which was in like 1841 or whatever, it was for Caroline's Comedy Hour. And all the material happened to be about my father. So I thought it would be interesting
that to present this, considering I'm known as a dad, and it's, you know, essentially I'm just bagging on him the entire time. And now that I'm a dad, I'm just kind of criticizing myself. So.
And you're taking a turn in these more dramatic roles, too. You starred last year in a movie called Chuck, inspired by the real-life Rocky Balboa.
Yes.
And tell us who you play in that.
Well, in Chuck, I play a guy, John, who's kind of the buddy of Chuck Wepner, who is, I mean, it's a great, you know, obviously it's the original story that Sylvester Stallone used to do Rocky, but it's also this story of someone having great success and self-destructing, which a lot of people can identify with. But it was a great opportunity for a role, and I remember when we were... Do you remember when I ran the lines? Because Jeannie also is my acting coach. And so we were running the lines, and Jeannie was like, "You're completely not right for this character."
Yeah.
And I was like, "I want to do it," because it was Liev, and it was a great director and all this stuff. And I am so incredibly white bread, but they were open to the idea, and you know, they went along with it, which is
great.
A guy from
Bayonne, right?
Bayonne,
New Jersey.
I played a guy from Bayonne, Jersey,
you
know? And it's like I'm from Indiana, so...
And you're also playing a lawyer in Chappaquiddick, which is coming out later this year.
And that's a blast because I actually play a guy who's smart, which is, I'm like one of the few people that has to act smart.
Uh-huh.
No, but it was, you know, the Chappaquiddick, and I played a guy who was an associate of Ted Kennedy who contributed in the cover-up that involved Chappaquiddick. And that was an amazing opportunity. And again, it's like, that was 69. And so it was all, in both those movies, you're just kind of dressing up. You're putting on clothes that, you know, are from a different era. And it's just fun to kind of pretend, you know. And I have these kids and I see them in their outfits and it's really not that different. You know, they get to pretend to be a superhero. I get to pretend to be a lawyer from Boston. It's fun.
Well, thanks again for being here. Congratulations on everything and come back soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate
you.
It. Thanks.
Thank you.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
I love a good parasocial relationship with a celebrity who will probably never know my name.
I mean, honestly, who knows? Don't count yourself out. But my favorite part about these feuds is how they're ignited by the tiniest things.
Jada, I love you. G.I. Jane 2, can't wait to see it.
I accidentally laminated my brows too much.
It starts small and then it gets so big.
To be honest, Naomi, I'm fearful of you to this day.
I don't know her.
We all just have to admit, we're addicted. Everybody has opinions. Everyone picks sides.
Leave Britney Spears alone right now.
From Wondery, I'm Sydney Battle.
And I'm Matt Bellassai.
And this is Dis and Tell, la, la, la. Where we unpack why we get so invested in these feuds and whether or not our attention only makes the whole thing worse.
Follow Dis and Tell wherever you get your podcasts.